பகவான் ஸ்ரீ அரவிந்தர் ஸ்ரீ அன்னை அப்பா தவ திரு கர்மயோகி அவர்களின் பாதாரவிந்தர்களில் பணிந்து இன்றைய நிகழ்ச்சியை துவங்குகிறோம். இன்று பகவானின் சமாதி தினம், டிசம்பர் 6 தர்சன நாள். இந்த நன்னாளில் மிஸ்டர் கேரி ஜேக்கப்ஸ் அவர்களின் டிஸ்கவரி ஆஃப் இன்ஃபினிட் என்ற டாபிக் எப்படி வாசுவது மிகவும் நல்ல நிகழ்ச்சியாக, நமக்கு பயன்படும் நிகழ்ச்சியாக அமைந்திருக்கிறது. அன்பர்கள் எல்லா தியான மைய அன்பர்களுக்கும் மற்றும் அனைத்து அன்பர்களுக்கும் எங்களின் வணக்கத்தையும் மகிழ்ச்சியையும் தெரிவித்துக் கொள்கிறோம்.
Good evening. December 5th, Sri Aurobindo's Mahasamadhi Day, is the most appropriate day for the topic that Appa has given, discovering the infinite. For it was Sri Aurobindo's mission to reveal the infinite to human beings. One could say that the most basic characteristic of his personality was its infinite vastness, which was felt as a pervading, all-pervading silence and peace, which is so strongly felt every year on this day. In our previous meeting on November 24th, we discussed the Human Aspiration, Chapter 1, where Sri Aurobindo tells us that the divine life is the earliest aspiration of humanity, and it's our ultimate destiny. He says it, in fact, it's inevitable, because it's God's intention. Why does he say that? He tells us that contradictions are nature's profoundest method of progressing. Why does he say that? He tells us that contradictions, what looks to be opposites, are really complements. Why does he say that? He tells us that all problems are really problems of harmony. Why? Why are all problems so simply described as problems of harmony? He tells us that evolution, the evolution of life and matter and mind and life and supermind in human life, is inevitable. Why? He tells us that divine life in an animal body is the path to humanity's ultimate resting point. How can he know that? How can he be so sure? The answer to all these questions lies in understanding what he means by the infinite. It is the infinite that is evolving here in finite form. Everything depends on our understanding of his conception of God, the divine, the absolute Brahman. It is that which determines the goal of our existence, the power of the divine to act in the world, our true self and our destiny. Sri Aurobindo describes this infinite in many terms, some from the tradition like Brahman, But the most all-encompassing description he uses is when he calls it reality omnipresent. Reality omnipresent is the ultimate reality of all. And the key to understanding that is to understand what he means by infinite. What do we mean by infinite normally? The first thing we probably think of is a very, very, very big number that goes on and on and on and on and on. Or perhaps some of us who are more visual, we think of a long road. A long road that just keeps going on and on and on beyond what we can see. Or in this age of space travel, with all the pictures we see from the Hubble and others, we think of the infinite, limitless space in the universe, which we are able to see now much better than at any time in the past. When we think of the infinite, we first think of, well, it's the opposite of the finite. Or it's a formless vast, which doesn't really have anything in it, but somehow it contains everything. Or we may think of it as the sum of all things, like a bag in which everything is contained. The mathematician is always often speaking about infinite. It's a very important concept for him. But for the mathematician, infinite doesn't really exist. There is really no such thing as infinity. But he has a symbol for it, and he cannot do his modern mathematics and his calculus without it. Sri Aurobindo gives us a clue to really understanding the mystery of the infinite when he says, the finite is the frontal appearance of the infinite. The finite is the frontal appearance of the infinite. Appa has coined another phrase which I find very powerful for understanding what this infinite is. He says it's the practical concept of infinity. Infinity is not merely a mathematical abstraction, as the mathematician would hold. Infinity is a practical reality. And if we can grab a glimpse, have a glimpse of that infinity, that reality, it gives us an opening to the spirit. So let's start not in outer space or in metaphysics, but let's start where we are in life and what we know and see how far we can discover something of the practical concept of infinity. And the starting point for us is to observe something that's happening right before our eyes all the time. We enjoy it, we see it, we benefit from it, but we often don't reflect on how and why it's happening. And that is, everything is multiplying. Everything is multiplying without end or limit. And when I say everything, I mean just about everything. Population. 10,000 years ago, when man discovered agriculture, there were only 10 million people living on the entire planet. That is, after humanity had been around for about 100,000 years or more, depending on where your starting point is, in 100 centuries, 100 millennium, in 100 millennia, in 10,000 centuries, we had only managed to grow 10 million people. Then something happened after we created agriculture. In a mere 8 millennia, population grew from 10 million to 226 million by the time of Christ. 8,000 years, it grew 22 times. And then something more happened, because by 1800, the population had multiplied 4 times. That is, in less than 2 millennia, it had increased 4 times. Something was going on here, but it was only the beginning. Between 1800 and 2000, population grew from 1 billion to almost 6 billion in actually 1990, almost 7 billion today, and in another 20 years, it will be 8 billion, which means in 200 years, we'll be adding 7 billion people, when it took us about 100,000 years to create the first billion. We're multiplying. It's not people that are multiplying. We human beings seem to multiply just about everything. Before Gutenberg discovered the printing press in 1440, all our books were written by hand. But by 1500, that is just 60 years, there were already 20 million books in print, in the first 60 years after Gutenberg discovered the printing press. It's not just people that are multiplying, our wealth is multiplying as well. In 1000 AD, 1000 years ago, the average per capita income in the world, measured by modern dollars, not by the old money, in today's money, the average in the world was about $450. And 900 years later, by 1900, it had grown almost 3 times, a little more than, almost 3 times, to $1,260. Now what happened? In one century, it has gone from 1,200 to 7,600. To put it another way, if you measure the growth of world per capita GDP from 1000 to 1820, it was increasing by $25 in a century. Not very impressive. Most of our young people today are increasing that much every month or every year. Then 1800 to 1900, in 735th century, that is 3 times faster. And from in the last 100 years, it has grown 191 times faster than it did during the first, from 1000 to 1800, 191 times faster. And it's growing faster today than it ever has in the history of humanity. Wealth is multiplying, not just the total wealth, but the wealth per capita, in spite of the fact that our population has grown so much. So if our population has gone 6 times since 1800, then actually our incomes are growing about 400 or 500 times since then in total terms. Not just money, everything, education. In USA, which is still today the most educated country in the world, in 1861, there was a grand total of 3 PhDs were awarded. 3 people got PhD in 1861. They must have been considered more than geniuses. By 1965, about 100 years later, there were almost 60,000. And today, in 2000, more than 200,000 PhDs were given in a single year. This is not the total number of PhDs. This is the new ones given in a single year. So we are multiplying our education at all levels. This is a map of the internet. And of course, we can't see ourselves here, but this big arrow is supposed to point to a little dot which tells us where we're on the internet now. All of us are on the internet now. We don't even represent a tiny speck in the billions of connections that are going on. Probably a few billion people who are connected and interacting with the internet 24 hours a day. The World Wide Web is really less than 20 years old. In 1993, there were only 623 websites in the whole world. Today, Mother Server Society itself and our friends, we probably have 15 or 20. Today in the world, there are more than 200 million websites, from 600 to 200 million in about 15 years. The credit card. These are just the data for Visa, which is only one of the credit cards, but the largest one. Visa was started in 1970. In 1970, they had 60 million cardholders. Actually, it was started a couple years before. 60 million. Today, there are 1.8 billion cardholders in the world. That's almost one-third of humanity. And this is just Visa. Of course, some people have more than one. In 1970, the total transactions of Visa were only $46 million. Today, if you can count that high, it's $5 trillion. From $46 million to $5 trillion. So money is multiplying. Everything is multiplying. Emails. Email's been around since even the 80s. By 1997, there were 1.6 billion emails being sent a year. Now it's 18 trillion, which is about more than 10,000 times. 10,000 times in just a little over 10 years. These are numbers. When I was growing up, we never used the word trillion for anything. Even billion, we hardly ever had any use for it. Today, if you're not talking in trillions, you can't communicate. So this is what's happening in the world. But it's not just the world that is multiplying. We know closer to home, things are multiplying in India as well. And all of you who are growing up today have seen it, and all of you who are of the earlier generation can be much more aware of how much and how rapidly things are changing. Look at India's GDP per capita. In 1950, it was $620. Today, it's more than $3,000 in real terms. That means the average Indian, let alone the fact that we have three times as many people in India today. We have three times as many people, but on the average, each person has five times more wealth, five times more real wealth. And that's in the lifespan of most parents today. For India, if you go back, it means from 1000 AD up to 1950, the growth of India's GDP was only 38% in 950 years. In the last 50 years, it grew by 200%. In the last 20 years, it grew by 138%. Now it's growing by about 8.5% a year, 9% a year. They say it'll soon be 10% a year, which means India, it'll double in about 7 or 8 years. Something very extraordinary is going on. Where does all this come from? Two wheelers. In 1951, there were only 30,000 in India. Today, there are 65 crores. That sounds like a lot of two wheelers. I think that number should be 65 million. That's itself big enough. That's about 2,000 times increase. And we only have to look out and see how crowded things are on the road to know that that's true. Air passenger traffic. In 1970, there were only a total of 50 lakh people. 5 million people traveled in India, on planes in India. Last year, it's 120 million. 120 million. Bank deposits. About the time I came to India, there was the total bank deposit in all the banks in India was 5,000 crores. Today, it's about 4 million crores. And that's deceptive because the money in the banks, at that time, it was most of the savings in the country. Today, we have thousands of crores more, millions of crores more that's in the stock market, in the mutual funds, in the insurance policies. And there's about 3 million crores just in gold as well. So the growth is many, many times greater even than these numbers indicate. No wonder all the foreign banks want to be in India today. I remember back in 1984, we did a study for the government of India. At that time, India's total software exports was $10 million. Today, last year, $50 billion. That's 5,000 times more, 5,000 times in 25 years. Telephone. I remember in India when you had to wait for years to get a telephone. In 1948, there were only 80,000 in the whole country. By 2000, it was 37 million. Today, it's more than 700 million. That is, in 50 years, India put in 37 million phones. And then in the last 10 years, we put in 20 times more than we put in the previous 50. They say that by 2013, there'll be 1.16 billion mobile subscribers alone in India. That's almost one for every person. And in Tamil Nadu today, there's already 880 for every 1,000 population. So 8 out of 10 people already have a mobile phone today. Where does all this come from? How do things multiply so much, so fast? This is the practical concept of infinity. In 1961, this is not 41,000 or 41 million. There were 41 TVs in India. 41. You could probably figure out. Everybody must have known who were those 41 people in the country who had TVs. Today, 134 million households. 134 million households have TV. So something remarkable is going on, which, the scientists and the economists, they give their own explanations, but personally, I don't know about you, but I have never found those explanations to be very satisfactory. They're just explanations. The real answer to where all of this comes from and how it's possible For that, we have to understand that infinity is a practical concept. Now, up till now, I've been talking about infinity as if it's just a very, very big quantity. But when Sri Aurobindo talks about infinity, he's not just talking about quantity. He's talking about qualities also. Infinite qualities. All different types of qualities. Shapes. Colors. Textures. Lines. Hues. All different types of things. This is Ranjani's favorite photo. How do you describe the infinite quality in an ocean at sunset? Breathtaking. It too is an expression of infinity, but it's not an infinite quantity. It's an infinite, indescribable experience, qualitative experience. Life is showing us the infinite all the time by its variety, by its various splendor that often leaves us breathless. So if you understand infinity, it's not enough, we think, in numbers. We have to try to grasp what is the source of all of this quantity, all of this quality, all of this marvel. All of this knowledge. It's a common saying in India that there's nothing that exists that isn't in the Mahabharata. I would like to say that the knowledge that Sri Aurobindo offers the world in Life Divine is greater than the sum total of all the knowledge that humanity has gathered over the past so many millennia. Just like our income today surpasses all the cumulative efforts of humanity over thousands of years. He has delivered in one book. He doesn't say all the knowledge, because there is no all, because it's infinite. But he has delivered to us, offered to humanity so quietly, without a word, the sum greater than all. Available. So what is infinity? What do we mean by infinity? What concept of infinity is vast enough to encompass all these quantities and qualities? The change in attitudes that we see in India today, how do we express, how do you quantify, how do you describe the difference between the young people today and the young people of the previous generation and their grandparents' generation, the confidence they have, the aspiration they have, the expectations they have. These are things that defy all our measurements. But don't we see that human beings are bringing out more of their capacity, more of their longings, more of their aspirations, more of their capacities and talents than in the past? And is there any limit to that? What is infinity? Is it an endless line of things, more and more and more and more, all the apples and oranges or flowers that you can imagine? What is the limit? What is the limit to what we can achieve? The common saying now is anything is possible. Throughout human history, a more common truth would be nothing is possible. What is already exists is possible. Today, we more and more feel anything is possible. A black man can become president of the United States of America. It was inconceivable just a few years ago. For Darcy, Lizzie can love him. The woman who she said, the man she said was the last man on earth she could ever marry. It's possible for her to say yes. That too is an expression of infinity. Imagine the courage of Darcy to even imagine a possibility with Lizzie after she has abused him so roundly at Hunsford. When Wickham tries to elope with Georgiana, Darcy arrives just in time to stop that elopement. Anything is possible. The elopement is possible, which could have ruined her life and his. Darcy coming in the nick of time is possible. That too is an expression of the infinite. When Lizzie is wandering through the mansion at Pemberley and feeling for the first time, maybe I've made a mistake. Just think, I could be mistress of this place. Imagine how she felt, much more imagine how he felt when he's walking up the path to his own house, which he has done hundreds or thousands of times in the past. He's tired from a long trip from London. He's ready to go and take a bath or take some rest or do some work. And he looks up and who is standing there in front of him on the path? Miss Elizabeth Bennet. Miss Bennet. He's speechless. Anything is possible. The unimaginable is possible. Because the infinite is expressing in the finite. Where does all this potential come from? If the infinite is not just an endless series of apples and oranges, what is it? This is a unidimensional concept. We can think, we can imagine an infinite that goes on and on and on, like an endless distance in one dimension. But that's not what Aurobindo means by infinite. That's what he calls a boundless finite. A finite without end. But a boundless finite is not an infinite. A huge number of quantity doesn't make something infinite. Even instead of going off in a vast distance, an unimaginably vast distance that you couldn't travel in millions and millions and millions and millions of years, Aurobindo says you're still thinking in terms of finite. You're still not understanding what infinity is. The whole universe, which is millions of light years and billions of stars, is still a finite. We have to think beyond that if we want to understand the infinite. And that infinite is right here, is right now, is in us. We need a conception of infinity that explains all of this. Okay, instead of imagining an infinite distance in one direction, imagine an infinite number of lines going out in an infinite number of directions, and each line following a different course to somewhere else and going on and on and on and on and on. And supposing we say that each of these lines is something different, a different color, a different texture. One of them is apples, one's oranges. There's one for every make of car and TV and type of dress and color of sari. we can add up all our lines radiating in all directions, and we still do not grasp what infinity is. Because infinity is not the sum of anything. It's not the sum of any number of parts or any number of lines or any amount of distance. And he quotes the Upanishads, this is the complete, and that is the complete. Subtract the complete from the complete. Is there. We have to understand what this is and what that is. That no matter how much you take out of it, it still remains undiminished. In fact, our problem is because we think of infinity as a thing, a very big thing, but still a thing. Infinity is not anything. It's the essence of everything. As Sri Aurobindo says it, all things are self-multiplications of that reality. So now we get a clue to the internet, the email, the telephones, the air travel, the per capita income, the population, the book printed books, the apples, the oranges, the flowers, and so many other things. All things are the self-multiplications of that reality, of that infinity. Notice self-multiplications. It is infinity that multiplies itself in form. So when Sri Aurobindo talks about infinity, he's not just talking about an unlimited amount or a duration, a long duration of so many years or light years, but something that is self-existent, which is illimitable, that is without limit, and indefinable, that is, it cannot be defined. The infinity is that from which all finites come, yet it's not the sum of all finites. He says the one becomes the many. The one becomes the many, but all these many are that which was already and is always itself. And in becoming the many, it remains the one. Creation adds nothing to its infinity. Infinity is the potential from which all actualities emerge. All our images, all our analogies, and all our metaphors are only a feeble attempt to capture something that can't be captured in words or thoughts, but it can be experienced. And one of the analogies I like best, this one. White light. What is contained within the white light? What we can say is that in that white light are all the colors imaginable in the universe. We all learn in school that there are 7 primary colors. And if you mix them together, you get lots of different combinations and shades. How many different combinations and shades? The human eye, according to scientists, can detect 10 million different shades and hues of color. 10 million. That's important to know, because when you buy a computer, they tell you that your computer can generate 16 million different colors. But we can't see all of those colors. But that's not all the colors that are there in the white light. If you take into account all the variations in shading, all the variations in the, if a color is surrounded by another color, it takes on a different shading. Somebody has calculated that the number of colors is 18 decillion. That's 18 with 33 zeros after it. I don't know any other way to describe it, and it won't fit on the computer screen even as a number. Where do all those colors come from? They all come from white light. And the white light remains white. It never changes. It doesn't get diminished. All those colors come from taking out a little glimpse, a little portion of the quality that's there concealed in the white light and yet invisible. We only see, we say there's nothing but white. It's empty, it's blank. And yet every conceivable color is somehow contained within it. It's a good analogy for the infinite. The colors, the whole spectrum of colors, is the frontal appearance, are different varieties of frontal appearance for that which is infinite, and somehow contains them all and is never diminished by them. Another way of thinking about the infinite is, when we think of God, when we think of the transcendent or Satchitananda, we often think, because of the tradition, of something that's absolutely still, quiet, in contrast to the incessant activity of the world we live in. Something that never changes, where we live in a world where everything is changing every minute. Something that's absolutely silent, where we experience all variety of sound all the time. We speak of the silent Brahman. But the tradition tells us there's not only a silent Brahman, there's an active Brahman. The silent Brahman, which is transcendent, is absolutely unchanging, also expresses as the active Brahman of the becoming of the universe. Absolute of the relative. There's been a tendency of mind to think the relative is finite, the relative world is finite, it's filled with all the things that we know are limited, and the absolute is infinite. But he tells us that both the relative and the absolute are infinite. Silence is infinite, and what can come out of the silence is also infinite. The being is infinite. The being is the source of the becoming. The becoming is an expression of the being. The becoming also is infinite. Jane Austen wrote a half a dozen novels. Trollope wrote about 40 or 50. Enid Blyton, as I said, wrote about 800 stories for children. All of those stories came out of the creative imagination of the author. So many characters, events came out. Thousands of characters came out. That creative consciousness of the artist, the author, the musician, is like the silent Brahman, out of which an infinite variety of created forms can come. There's no limit to that creative consciousness, and there's no limit to the variety and number of creations that can come. So the relative and the absolute, it's not just finite and infinite, both are expressions of the infinite. And that's because the finite and the infinite are not separate things. They're not different things at all. They're inseparable. This is an image of the sea, the ocean at rest. And it's how the rishis describe the passive infinite Brahman before it manifests. Shurbindo describes this in the chapter on conscious force. And he says, this infinite ocean, he calls it an infinite ocean of energy at rest. Because it's at rest, it has no form, it has no activity, it has no movement. Of course, we don't know any ocean like that because there's nothing in the manifest universe that is really at rest. But it's an image for us, an ocean that's absolutely still, not a ripple, not a vibration of movement or change or form. And it just goes on and on and on and on forever. And tradition tells us that out of this motionless infinity, a vibration arises. And it says the first vibration is a vibration of sound. And the first sound is Om. And Om is a movement of that still ocean that creates a wave, that creates a pattern or a ripple across the surface of that ocean. And as those ripples go on, and as the Om is repeated, and as other sounds emerge from it, the surface of that ocean creates form. What we call waves. And all the forms in the universe, the visual forms which we see with our eyes, the forms of sound which we hear with our ears, the thoughts in our mind, the emotions in our heart, the sensations in our nerves, all are forms or waves on the surface of that infinite ocean. How can you separate the ocean from the waves from the ocean? The ocean may exist without the waves, but there can be no wave without the ocean. In the same way, form and formlessness coexist. All form is an expression of the formless. A form is not a thing in itself. Sri Aurobindo says, no form can exist in itself. No material object can exist in itself. It can only exist because it's a form of the infinite. So the form and the formless are not opposites to one another. The form is a frontal appearance of the formless. The formless is the condition for the creation and manifestation of form. And a good analogy for this is gold. Gold is the formless, the infinite. You can make anything out of gold. It can be a gold vase or a gold idol, gold jewelry, gold coins, gold plate, spoon, or anything else. it does not cease to be gold just because it has taken on a form. And that's why Sri Aurobindo insists the world is a form of the infinite reality. Therefore, the world must be real. Just as the gold jewelry is very much gold, everything that exists in the universe is very much a form of the reality, a form of the omnipresent reality. It is real. It is finite appearance of the infinite. And he says this finite and this infinite are inseparable. He has a beautiful term for it. He says, it's an incoercible unity. You cannot take it and say, I want this and I don't want that. They go together. The materialist insists on the form and he ignores that from which the form is created, the spirit from which the form is created. He says, no, no, only form exists, only matter exists. He tells us in chapter 2, the denial, the materialist denial. In chapter 3, he talks about the ascetic refusal. The ascetic goes and experiences the pure formless being. And he says, that is reality, not this. That alone is the reality, not this. But Sri Aurobindo says, how can you separate fire, heat from light? Fire from light. Fire and light are inseparable. They are two aspects, two expressions of a single reality. The finite and the infinite are two expressions of the omnipresent reality. These numbers up at the top of the screen are supposed to represent the binomial code from which all the computer languages are created, and of which all the things that are represented on the computer are finally reduced to an endless series of zeros and ones. Think about it. This baby's face, this glorious sunset, a beautiful flower, a full-length motion picture, a line of poetry from Sri Aurobindo's Savitri, like calling to the adventure of consciousness and joy. As far as the computer goes, they're all represented by a series of zeros and ones. There's no pictures in the computer. There's no sounds in the computer. There's no words or numbers in the computer. There's simply this zero, endless series of zeros and ones. So this zeros and ones is something like the formless infinite that can take on any form and represent itself as any form in the universe. That's what our human imagination does. Our human imagination is capable of taking on any shape and any form, but it always remains what it is, unchanged. If I imagine myself to be a fireman or a hero or the richest man in the world or a great athlete or whatever it is, I don't cease to be what I am. My creative imagination doesn't cease to be what it is. It just takes on various forms. Infinity is the whole. Infinity is the whole. What do we mean by that? One of the great mysteries of modern science is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first, the seed or the tree? After all, you need a tree to produce the fruit to generate the seed that will fall down and then grow into a tree so you can have more fruit and more seeds, flowers, fruit, and seeds. But which came first? Sri Aurobindo tells us in Life Divine, you'll never solve the problem that way. If you want to understand the tree and the seed, you have to understand that which makes them possible. You have to understand the soil on which they grow, the water, the nutrients, the sunlight without which they don't exist. He says it's cosmos that has created the tree and the seed. And it's God, the infinite, that has created, that has become the cosmos. And he's not just talking in platitudes here. He's trying to give us the essential secret to understand all the processes in the universe. To understand why at that crucial moment, most crucial moment in her life when Lizzie's reading the telegram, the letter from Jane about Lydia's elopement, there's a knock on the door and Darcy walks in. You will never explain it in terms of a sea and a tree. You can only understand it when you look at the totality and understand the infinity from which all finites express. It's said in the tradition, the absolute does not move, but it's always ahead. There's an old story in the tradition which Satprem uses in his book, The Adventure of Consciousness, one of my favorite stories. A very arrogant king constantly demands subservience from all the people in his court, including the sages, the Brahmins, everybody who comes. He makes them admit how great he is, and he gets word that a very famous sage is coming to his kingdom. And of course, anyone who doesn't compliment him and praise him sufficiently, he locks them up in prison or has them killed. This sage came to his court. He knew well the reputation of the king. And so the vain, arrogant king asked the wise man, tell me, who is greater, God or myself? The wise man thought for a few moments, smiled and said, undoubtedly you are, your majesty, because you can banish anybody from your kingdom. But God did not banish anybody from his kingdom. The king was defeated by this ultimate wisdom that there is nothing outside of God's kingdom. We can go further and say there is nothing that is outside of God. There is nothing that doesn't exist within God and of God as a form of God. And this is what Sri Aurobindo means by the omnipresent reality. It is both the form and the formless. The finite and the infinite, the one and the many. It's the transcendent, the universal and the individual. Every one of us is that. It's the manifest and the unmanifest. God, man and nature, spirit and matter. It's Brahman and Maya, Purusha and Prakriti. Ishwara and Shakti. It's both the knowledge and the ignorance. It's what we call divine and what we call undivine. It's the involution and the evolution. It's the superconscient, but it's not just the superconscient. It's the conscious, it's the subliminal, it's the subconscious, it's the inconscient as well. It's the animate and the inanimate, the corporeal, that which has a body and that which doesn't have a body, the intelligent and unintelligent. It's the timeless eternal, and it's also the eternity of time. It's the being. And it's also that which the rishis in the Upanishad called the non-being. That too is this reality. It's the relative and the absolute. Because the relative exists in the absolute, and vice versa, the absolute exists in the relative. The infinite is the source of all qualities. It itself, we say, is qualityless. But by qualityless, we don't mean it's a blank, vacant emptiness. We mean we cannot determine its qualities because it is every conceivable quality. It's like the white light. We cannot see the color because all colors are there. Only when you take one strand out, you can see what's inside one strand at a time. And Sri Aurobindo says, it is that indeterminable, it cannot be determined, that determines itself as the infinite and as the finite. The indeterminable determines itself. It doesn't determine anything else because there is nothing else. It determines itself as the infinite, and it determines itself as finite form. And he says these forms are not arbitrary inventions out of nothing. All realities are powers, forms, and self-shapings of the spiritual substance. Everything that exists is a power, a form, and a self-shaping of the spirit. Figure, line, color, design, mass express the secret values and significances of an unseen reality. The whole world, the whole universe, the whole cosmos is an infinite expression of the infinite secret values contained in the infinite. He says that a quality, any quality, is a character of a power of conscious being. It's like a flower. Every flower, Mother has named more than 800 flowers and said each one represents a vibration of consciousness. Each one is a vibration of being from the divine. And that's true for everything that exists. So if we really want to understand the finite and finite, objects, people, events, circumstances, we must see the infinite behind the forms. We must discover the infinite from which the character of these things expresses. We must sense the silence behind the activity. He says the infinite is that which is inexhaustible. The more it grows, the more forms it takes, the greater it becomes. It can never be exhausted. Addition and subtraction do not change it. The great mathematician Ramanujam seemed to have an intuitive knowledge of this. He said, one represents the universe. God is zero. God is the zero from which everything comes. Sri Aurobindo refers to it as the fathomless zero in Savitri. The infinite is Kamadhenu. It's Draupadi's vessel, the Akshaya Patram, the inexhaustible source, cornucopia. And one of the practical expressions of that infinity, which Appa is this is also true of income and expense. The more you give, the more you receive. The more you spend, the more you'll receive. Money grows like everything else through this process. Some people have discovered this secret in their own lives and become fabulously wealthy, not because they conserve more and save more than everybody else, but they understand this secret. The bank knows this. Every bank knows this. No bank can be in business if it only accepts deposits. When a bank accepts deposits, it's expected to pay interest. It can only pay interest if it lends out that money and earns more on it than it has to pay. So the big problem for banks is not to collect deposits. The big problem is to give out all that they receive so that they can keep multiplying money, the way we saw Visa multiplying. The infinite is that which is inexhaustible. If anything runs out, if anything is in short supply, if anything is in want, it means we are in the finite consciousness. If anything keeps growing, and we saw so many things, the whole country is growing, the world is growing and multiplying, it's because at some way, in some degree, we are allowing the infinite to shine through. And the secret for unrivaled prosperity is to release more and more of the finite, infinite in finite things. The infinite is not just there in the cosmic, in the supracosmic, in the macrocosm. It's there in the microcosm as well. It's there in the smallest of the small. This is an image of what they call a fractal. And the image in the upper left corner, left on my screen, maybe right on yours, is a big image, and there's a portion with a circle around it, a black circle around it. The other image, the lower part of the screen, is an expanded version of what's in that circle. And what you see is when you go in, like with a microscope, and look deeply at that pattern, that it has an infinite complexity within it. Now, if you draw a similar square anywhere on the lower photo, and you zoom in hundreds of times, thousands of times, you will find an equally complex pattern is there deep within it. And you can repeat that over and over and over again without end, because in the tiniest thing, there is an infinite complexity, an infinite variation. That's the secret of nature that the scientist has discovered. The infinity is not just in outer space. The infinity is there in inner space, in the smallest thing. This is a conceptual drawing of the atom. The atom is the microcosm. What we don't often understand is the atom is as complex and as big in its own way as the universe. If you have the nucleus of the atom, which is in the center of that drawing, if it's represented by a small bush in the middle of a big stadium, athletic stadium, the first of the electrons that are circulating around the outside those are those colored dots, will be on the highest seat at the farthest reach of the stadium. All in between will be empty space, like the space between the earth and the moon or the earth and the sun. There's a universe inside every atom. This is pictures of microorganisms, bacteria, in the human body. Billions of these bacteria, this number which is going off the screen, it's 10 with 15 zeros in it. This represents the number of bacteria in the human body. We have more, 10 times more bacteria living in our body than we do cells in the body. We are ourselves a universe, and so many species are enjoying living within our environment. Most of them are harmless, many of them are very helpful and essential for our health. A few of them are troublesome, but we are an infinity. We have an infinite number within ourselves. It's not only things that are infinite. Every act is infinite. What is an act? An act is a microcosm. Every act is based on thoughts, beliefs, opinions, attitudes, sentiments, motives, urges, impulses, sensations. If you examine the smallest act, it contains a universe of knowledge and complexity. In our discussions of Pride and Prejudice and in Appa's commentary, he's taken Darcy's one word when he called Lizzie tolerable. And he showed there's an infinite complexity behind that one word. Why he said that word just at that moment. To discover the infinite complexity within our acts is to discover the infinite in ourselves and the power to call forth the infinity. The power lies in our going in and understanding the act, our motives, our attitudes, our opinions, our habits, our urges, our impulses. That's what Sherbindo means. That's what coming means. He speaks of consecration. Consecrating an act to disturb the universe act and offer it to Mother. And then any act, the smallest, least significant act, becomes a doorway from the finite to the infinite. Any moment in time, any moment in time can be the moment when Darcy looks up and sees Lizzie on the path, or Lizzie looks up and sees Darcy standing before her. It is our choice that determines, that makes the finite reveal the infinite. No two moments are alike, because every moment is a frontal appearance of the infinite. Every moment is unique, just like every human fingerprint is different. No two experiences ever repeat, Mother says. Even spiritual experiences, they never repeat. They're always different. At every moment, we have the opportunity to convert the finite into the infinite. And this infinite is not just the sum of everything, but it includes all opposites as well. It's the whole from which all opposites arise. Darcy and Wickham, spirit and matter, knowledge and ignorance, divine and undivine, being and even non-being, are all parts or expressions of this infinite. And that's why when anything comes to us, rather than saying no, rather than refusing, rather than running away, rather than reacting and say, I hate you, rather than saying, you are at fault, We grow when we accept what comes to us, when we harmonize with it, when we discover why it comes to us. Non-reaction is the first step to move from the finite to the infinite, because the infinite includes all opposites. It includes all that you want to run away from. And that thing that you want to run away from is coming to help you become infinite. You must embrace it. You must see the greater truth that it offers. And Sri Aurobindo says, even death is only coming to make life immortal. Not only is the world that infinite, the transcendent that infinite, but we, each individual, is also that infinite. Man is no small, insignificant dot like the dot on this page. He is the transcendent. You are, we all are that transcendent. We have within us that infinity as an expression of uniqueness. Each person is unique. Each person represents a vibration of that infinite being. And that's why the great mystery, that's why one man can change the world. How can one man change the world? When there are 6.8 billion people, how can one man change a country, even when India was only 350 million people? How can a Gandhiji make such a difference to Indian freedom? I'm not even speaking about Sri Aurobindo, because nobody realized what he was doing. How could a Napoleon conquer all of Europe? Sri Aurobindo says that when the whole armies of Europe ganged up against France, all so many nations, Austria, Spain, Russia, Germany, England, all, God put one man on the other side. He put Napoleon on the other side, and Napoleon conquered Europe, just like Krishna, without his army, helped the Pandavas come to victory. Churchill, through one man, Sri Aurobindo was able to win and turn the tide in World War II. That is the infinite potential in every human being. Appa has been inviting us to discover that potential for material prosperity. Material prosperity is the smallest and least important. It's not why we are born as human beings. It's not the destiny of the human race. But it's something you can see, it's something you can count. And it's the easiest thing to create. The whole world is creating infinite material abundance. Millions of people, billions of people have already done it. So there's no reason why any devotee cannot create that abundance. The material prosperity is only the first step. Darcy sought the psychological prosperity of romantic fulfillment. He found something which he considers infinitely more valuable than any amount of material prosperity. I believe he would have given up Pemberley for Elizabeth. He would have said, it's nice to have Pemberley with Elizabeth, but she's worth more than Elizabeth. At least in his mind, she was as valuable as a dowry of Pemberley. Her personality, the delight he could find from that. That's material prosperity. That's the highest human fulfillment, which Appa refers to constantly as romance eternal. But beyond that psychological prosperity, Sri Aurobindo is inviting us to spiritual prosperity, to evolve as individuals to discover the infinity within ourselves. It's all very nice But I'm sure most of us are feeling. We talk, it's very nice to see all and hear all about the infinity all around us. But when I look around, I see limitation everywhere. I see everything looks finite. I have a limited amount, limited amount of energy, a limited amount of opportunity. Why? What's wrong? What do I do to discover that infinite in the finite? Sri Aurobindo tells us very clearly in the first chapter of Life Divine, our view matters. Our view matters. If you want to discover the infinite in the finite, you have to change your view. The infinite expresses as the finite. We see the finite because of the limitations in our view. We believe, the scientist believes, that matter is all there is, and matter is inconscient, lifeless, and that's all, and somehow life has come out of it, and spirit is non-existent, because the scientist looks at the world around him with what Sri Aurobindo calls the material intellect. He looks with his senses, and he believes what his senses tell them is the truth, the reality. The way Lizzie said, that Wickham is so handsome, he must be true. The physical senses do not tell us, do not reveal the reality. They do not reveal the truth. They do not reveal goodness, and they certainly do not reveal the infinite. If we want to discover the infinite, we have to move away from the physical senses, which the rishis did. They discovered when you detach from the senses, your mental capacity becomes intuitive. You begin to perceive truths that the senses can never tell you. As long as we say, I will believe it when I see it, we insist on being finite. As long as I say, I have never experienced it, therefore it's not true, we are stuck in the finite. No progress will ever occur if we limit ourselves to our past experiences and say that sets the limit on the future. If people really, if it was true that our past experiences were the reality, then we would never create anything new. Then nothing new would ever happen. Every day, every minute in the world, something new has happened, something new is being created, things are changing. And we see how much the world is changing today. Then what is the sense, what is the meaning in saying, it hasn't happened to me, therefore I don't believe it. It can happen to you the very next moment. My watch says it's 12 minutes to 7, but I hear a speaker on now. Does that mean that we're running out of time?
No, that's it. Take care of me.
I'll finish in 7 minutes. To see the infinite, we have to detach ourselves from the physical mind. It's what Mother says in the psychic education. The first thing we have to do is give up faith in the way our mind sees the world around us. We should shift our faith from what the mind tells us, from what our family tells us, from what tradition tells us, from what our community tells us, so that only when we give that up, we'll be able to see the opportunity that's waiting for us at every moment behind every finite appearance. Like Darcy when he's walking up the path at Pemberley. It's the ego that cuts us off from that infinity, because I say, I am separate, I exist for myself, I have to take care of myself. How can I help others? How can I have goodwill for others? How can I give to others? I must take care of myself. Meaning, I must insist on my finite. I must be that black dot in the middle of infinity and hug and myself in a prison of my own making, a prison like Darcy's, a prison of arrogance, selfishness, self-importance, self absorption. We have to come out of our self-absorption and discover the infinite value of everybody, of every moment, of every opportunity around us. We must give up the ego. Family tells us, tend to yourself, keep to our group, keep to our community, follow the tradition, be like everybody else, meaning be finite. To reach out to the infinite, we have to see we have to decondition our minds, stop looking at the world through our ego. We have to believe that the impossible is possible. Refuse to accept the limits. To believe in the tradition is to believe in the finite. The lower tradition tells us, be modest, be humble, don't be greedy, don't ask for too much. But the highest tradition of which you are so blessed to come says, the reality is infinite. There are no limits. That is the tradition we must affirm. Shift from ambition of the ego to the soul's aspiration. Shift from pragmatic values like Charlotte, who says, I better take the opportunity that's offered to me because I won't get anything better. Shift to the high values of Mr. Bennett, who says, my honor demands that I repay the money to Mr. Gardner. Everybody's lying. Shift from falsehood or corruption, because everybody does it, I must also do it. Shift to the truthfulness which will reveal the infinite. An impossible thought becomes possible when the finite reveals the infinite. Lizzie was right when she said that Wickham would never marry Lydia. It's impossible. But he did. Elizabeth was right when she said that you're the last man I would ever marry. But he became the first man. We release the infinite in the finite when we do anything perfectly. Perfection in the infinitesimal releases the infinite that's there. The smallest act matters, every gesture, every word, how we care for the smallest thing matters, keeping perfect accounts, perfect cleanliness, perfect punctuality, manners matter. We release the infinite in the finite by self-giving. Appa's constantly telling us, you grow by self-giving. The more you give, the more you grow. We release the infinite and the finite by shifting to faith. From what you see, from what you know, from faith in what you have achieved, from faith in what you think, from faith in your capacities and endowments, from faith in family or friends or organization or community or nation. From faith in the finite to faith in the infinite. From faith in life to faith in mother. If the omnipresent reality, the truth of our being and existence is infinite, then what should we have faith in? Should we have faith in our limited understanding, our limited capacities, the apparent limitations imposed by opposing forces in life around us? Or should we shift our faith from the finite to that in and around us which is not subject to any finite limits? All our capacities, all our accomplishments, all our knowledge, all our experience is less than a drop in the infinite, limitless ocean. Yet that infinity is the very essence of our own being. Sri Aurobindo says we should not err, we should not make the mistake of taking our limited experiences or thinking that we are insignificant. We are not insignificant to the finite, infinite. The infinite may not matter to us, but we matter very much to the infinite because it is our true self, because it has become us in order to manifest its infinity in us, in our lives. When we rely on ourselves, we insist on the privilege of being finite, limited, ignorant, egoistic. When we rely on Mother, we shift the center of our existence from the finite to the infinite. Nothing is impossible. Be prepared for the unexpected.
நன்றி மனம் கூறி விடைபெறுகிறோம்.